The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. I'm going to start with the final article from Prevention Magazine's Secrets of Aging Well. Today we're going to look at the final chapter, Chapter 6, Skin Longevity. Having an effective skincare regimen retains the skin's firmness, reduces the appearance of fine lines and wrinkles, and boosts brightness and radiance. Plus, when you maintain your skin health, you'll feel younger. Here, experts share their best skincare tips. Skincare at every age. As you age, it's important to take care of your skin. Here's how you can maintain youthful-looking skin through the years. Time has a way of catching almost everything, including our complexion. In our 20s and 30s, our skin's needs are very different from those in our 50s and 60s. The thought of switching up your routine and shifting through all the skincare products, promising to be the fountain of youth, might seem overwhelming. But there are a few simple rules you can follow to maintain healthy skin through the years. It's good to understand the skin's natural aging process and what ingredients can help maintain and boost your skin's best natural glow through each decade, says Nazanin Saidi, MD, a dermatologist and a clinical professor at Thomas Jefferson University in Philadelphia. The earlier you begin to care for your skin, the longer you can hold off the inevitable signs of aging. There's a natural progression of treatment for skin, prevention, rejuvenation, and then minimizing the visual effects of aging, like fine lines and wrinkles. As you age, you'll add to your routine as you face different skin concerns. Read on to learn how to simplify the task of choosing skincare products with picks tailored for your decade. Let's start in the 30s. That was a long time ago. Prevention. By age 30, experts say you should begin to build the foundation of your skincare routine to maintain overall skin health and prevent concerns that often arise later in life. These include skin cancer, as well as fine lines, wrinkles, dryness, and loss of firmness. The best way to avoid or put off these concerns is to wear sunscreen every day to protect against UV damage, the main cause of skin cancer, and visible signs of aging. Dr. Saide says, now is also the time to introduce a retinoid to your routine. Retinoids are vitamin A derivatives that will help increase cell turnover and collagen production effectively, slowing down the aging process by preventing and reversing fine lines, wrinkles, and discoloration. In your 40s, rejuvenation. As you enter your 40s, be sure to continue the good skincare practices and use of sunscreen and retinoids you practiced in your 30s. But if you haven't adopted these practices, it's never too late to start, says Karen Lay, DO, a pediatric and cosmetic dermatologist in Scottsdale, Arizona. By this decade, people often have concerns that go beyond basic skin health. Our 40s are when we usually first notice the sag, or the loss of firmness and elasticity of the skin, due to the drop in collagen production. This is a good time to start using products with growth factors to help rejuvenate and renew the skin. Growth factors are proteins that help support collagen production, which can help firm and tighten your skin. Look for oligopeptides, or human-derived fibroblast media on the ingredient labels of growth factor products to ensure that you're choosing the most effective formula. And they do have a couple of suggestions here. One is Skin Medica TNS Advanced Plus Serum. It's $295 for a little thingy at Amazon. And then there's BioPel Tensage Growth Factor Intensive Serum 40. That's only 136 at Amazon and looks like it might be slightly larger. Then in your 50s, repairing. New skin issues that appear in your 50s are dullness, age spots, and hyperpigmentation. Good news, a quality vitamin C product will address all of these concerns while contributing to a brighter complexion. Vitamin C is a powerful antioxidant that fights free radical damage and hyperpigmentation and is overall very reparative for the skin. These products tend to be most potent and stable in serum form, especially when combined with ingredients like vitamin E and ferulic acid. For best results, continue to use growth factors while introducing vitamin C. If you would like to simplify your skin care routine, use vitamin C during the day and growth factors at night. During these years, skin tends to be more sensitive for many women because of slower estrogen production. So focusing on gentle products and ingredients that work for you and not being afraid of a little trial and error is key during this time. And their suggestions are La Roche-Posay 10% Pure Vitamin C Face Serum. That's $45 at Amazon. And SkinCeuticals CE Ferulic 182 at Dermstore. And finally, in your 60s and beyond, hydration. After age 60, skin is less efficient at retaining moisture and tends to appear drier because of lower estrogen levels. Over time, your oil glands will produce less oil. This oil, called sebum, helps protect and moisturize your skin, says Dr. Saidi, who recommends focusing on hydration at this stage. For optimal skin hydration and a boost of moisture, look for products that contain hyaluronic acid. This powerhouse ingredient helps hydrate your skin by attracting water into it. It's going to give your skin that plump, youthful look. And the products they suggest, Neutrogena Hydro Boost Water Gel, that's $15 at Walmart, or La Roche-Posay Hyaluronic Acid B5 Serum, and that's $40 at Amazon. And thus ends our journey through prevention's secrets of aging well. Now moving on to AARP, the magazine, under the heading of This is 60, Life 6.0, Precious Cargo of Loss, Grief, and Release via A Trek with Her Father's Ashes. This is by Cindy Schweik-Handler. My husband and I had been traveling heavy since leaving our New Jersey home to kayak across the lakes of the upper Midwest last June. Harry and I had crammed our Subaru with luggage, life preservers, oars, snacks, and a 5-cup Mr. Coffee. Our boats were strapped to the roof. In the way back, a 4-pound box was cushioned in towels. It contained my father's ashes. This last was a late addition to our packing list. The rest served the trip's original purpose of celebrating Harry's and my recent retirements. Harry thought it would be memorable to launch this next chapter with a 2-week adventure promising big skies, freshwater lakes, local brew pubs, and omnipresent whitefish. A few months before we hit the road, my 91-year-old father had died. It was a painful loss, though not unexpected. My mother, two younger sisters, and I had been losing him to Alzheimer's disease for years. On every visit back to St. Louis, where he would spend all but a few years of his life, it was apparent how much more diminished he had become. In the early stages of memory loss, my naturally sharp dad started repeating a greatest hits lineup of anecdotes, such as how he learned to fly a small plane with a trainer who hid his epilepsy. He conflated childhood memories with adult experiences, asking if I remembered Terry, his cherished terrier, who died decades before I was born. He feared change and was as firmly stuck in place as the evergreens he had planted in the backyard, though the house was ill-equipped for a frail elderly man who wouldn't let anyone but his wife touch him. As his 24/7 aide, my mother was awake whenever he was, usually on kitchen or bathroom duty, at the mercy of his mercurial emotions. If she ventured out of his sight for more than a couple of minutes to chat with a visitor, he called frantically for her to return. I was sometimes one of those visitors whom he viewed, in his illness-altered perspective, as competing for his wife's attention. My mother and I were talking in the kitchen once when my dad wandered in and demanded that she watch an old movie with him. "Hank, your daughter's here," my mom countered gently. "Why don't you keep us company?" He still recognized me, but it didn't matter. He gave her a long, suspicious side eye, then trudged back to the comforts of his black-and-white Danny Kaye. I knew, of course, that this was not the warm and mischievous family man who, while on a business trip to New York, treated me to 2 Broadway shows in one day. That version of my father would have been mortified to witness the hell this new version made my mother endure. I understood all that, yet losing the father-daughter bond still hurt. A year before he died, my dad fell at home, never walked again, and my mother had to place him in a memory care facility. He was medicated and unconscious more often than not, but when he wasn't, he railed relentlessly against the relocation and his fate. On a visit 2 weeks before he died, I told my mother I couldn't bear to watch him suffer anymore. The painful memories were crowding out the happy ones and making them harder to recall. He took his last breath surrounded by my mother and sisters and their spouses, but Harry and I were not there. Though I didn't regret missing his last moments, he had stopped registering my presence months earlier, I was sorry I wasn't there to support my grieving family. To make amends, I offered to do something everyone else was too exhausted to manage, take responsibility for his ashes. My mother chose where they were to be spread, Ephraim, Wisconsin, where my dad had loved to go sailing during family vacations in Door County. Harry and I were grateful that a stay there fit neatly into our kayaking itinerary. 4 days into our trip, on a late June afternoon, my family gathered at a dock on Ephraim Bay. My mother, sisters, and brother-in-law are not kayakers, and that's okay because their role there was to recline on outdoor chaises by the water and bear witness. The waves gave minimal resistance to our paddles as Harry and I pushed off, and we moved beyond the swimmers, paddleboarders, and fishermen to a distant spot dappled in dancing sunlight. There, Harry produced the large, clear bag full of powdery gray dust. The plan had been for Harry to upend it into the water while I watched, but 2 factors made me change my mind. First, the wind was blowing in my direction, and there was a chance we would reenact the scene in The Big Lebowski where Donnie's released ashes fly into the dude's face. I would be playing Jeff Bridges. Second, I felt the burial could confer an element of closure. I was suddenly possessed of a strong desire to be the last person in contact with my father's remains. This is the place that brought out his life-loving nature. And as I looked around, the good times came flooding back. It's where he never gave up on teaching my sister and me how to sail, even though we were slow and the boom bonked us on the head every time the boat tacked. Door County is where he took my 2 sons out on a fishing boat, and they returned hours later with a giant salmon and 3 goofy grins. Along the shore, I could make out the soda pop shop, where he bought us kids ice cream cones, then tapped out of them when we looked the other way, excuse me, let's say. Then he tapped us on the shoulder and pretended to take bites out of them when we looked the other way. I pictured him smiling and in his element. His presence surrounded us. Harry passed me the bag. I turned it over the side of the kayak, and the ashes slid effortlessly into the cool, playful waters, almost as if they recognized they were home. For a few moments, I sat in the stillness and appreciated how a trip to the past can help a person move forward. We would toast his memory later. For now, we turned around and kayaked back to the family he created. Freelance writer and editor Cindy Handler, 67, recently retired as an editor of and frequent contributor to The Record / NorthJersey.com. Her work has also appeared in The New York Times, The Washington Post, Red Book, Parenting, Newsweek, and other publications. Now, in this same article, we have a article under the heading of Fix Your Body, Breathe Better. As we age, many of us are breathing abnormally, mouth breathing. That can contribute to, among other things, snoring, gum disease, and bad breath, and may increase your risk of developing high blood pressure and heart disease. It is best to breathe through your nose and engage your diaphragm, not your chest, says Patrick McEwen, founder of Oxygen Advantage and author of Mouth Breather. This breathing method will help calm the nervous system, improve oxygen exchange, filter the air you breathe, and reduce the body's stress response. McEwen offers simple steps to improve your breathing. Breathe through your nose. During rest, sleep, and even exercise, keep your mouth closed. Consider using special mouth tape that surrounds your mouth but doesn't cover it completely to help hold the lips together during sleep. So the picture here shows this mouth tape in a rectangular shape around your mouth, but not across the lips at all. 2, breathe light. Take a light, silent breath in through your nose and exhale slowly. Breathing light involves breathing less air into the body, which helps to improve everyday breathing patterns. 3, breathe slowly. Reduce your respiratory rate to activate the relaxation response and bring balance to the body and the mind. And finally, breathe low. Use your diaphragm to promote oxygen transfer, calm emotions, and support overall health. This was by Barbara Hannah Guferman, host of Age Better podcast and author of Love Your Age. And the final article in the section is Put Me In, Coach. Are you daunted by the prospect or reality of retiring? A professional retirement coach can help. While many Americans happily slip into retirement in their 60s, for others it can be a confusing and even traumatic transition from work to not work. Enter the retirement coach. These certified professionals can help you plan for the mental, social, physical, and spiritual aspects of retirement. The big question we help answer is, how will you know if you're winning at retirement? Winning means replacing your work identity, filling your time, staying relevant and connected, staying mentally and physically active, and living according to your values and core beliefs. In essence, coaches help you create a plan for the life you desire, such as travel, socializing, exercise, and volunteering, so you can more easily shift into your next act. Fees vary based on experience and location, running from $125 an hour up to $1,000 in bigger cities. Laura says, some coaches charge a flat fee of a few thousand dollars for 6 months, which includes phone calls, texts, and emails, to give encouragement or additional guidance. Many retirement coaches offer virtual sessions as well. Sounds useful? Here's how to find the right retirement coach for you. Search online. Check out directories from coaching companies and platforms, including the RCA Retirement Coach Directory and NOOMI, that's N-O-O-M-I-I. Look for professional credentials such as Certified Professional Retirement Coach, CRPC, or the Retirement Life Coach Certification, which is awarded by the Retirement Life Plan Company. 2. Understand their history. Look at the coach's background and experience to see how they ended up in this vocation. Many coaches come from the financial services industry or human resources, or they've done some type of executive coaching or academics. 3. Pick a coach who fits your personality. You may prefer working with someone of a similar age, gender, or life experience. If available, listen to a podcast interviews or read blog posts to get a sense of the style before reaching out. Many coaches offer a free initial consultation that can help both of you decide if you are a good match. This article was by Jacqueline Greenberg. Now moving on to AARP The Bulletin, a Q&A with Ina Garten. Cooking is like driving a car. You have to adjust the wheel along the way. The 76-year-old TV personality and best-selling cookbook author's new memoir, Be Ready When the Luck Happens, describes building an empire around simple meals and everyday hospitality. What's your creative process, and has it changed as you've gotten older? When I had my first book contract, the idea I started with was very specific. I wanted you to be able to open a book and say, "That photograph looks amazing. That looks delicious." Then I wanted you to look at the recipe and say, "I can actually make that." I have to say that hasn't really changed over the 25 years that I have been working on cookbooks. I've gotten better at it, gotten more detailed, but my creative process is pretty much the same. In your new memoir, you write about difficulties growing up. How did you overcome that? The negative voice in my head is my mother saying, "You think it's a good idea, but it'll turn out badly." It's always there. I'm very diligent about making sure that when I hear that voice, I counter it. I go, "Oh, that's her voice. It's not me. What do I think?" Is there a secret sauce to living a more confident life? I surround myself with people who are happy and positive and smart and funny. Certainly my husband, Jeffrey, but others too, and we support each other. That gives you a sense of confidence. Somebody also once suggested that I get up each morning and write 5 things that I do really well. At first I thought, well, that'll get me through a day, maybe a day and a half. But what I found is that over a period of several weeks, I could think of 5 more things, big things, little things, that I had done well. When I get anxious about my ability, I go look at that list. Your memoir describes plenty of pursuits before you bought the Barefoot Contessa food specialty store in New York. You learned to fly a plane, renovate houses, and even landed a position in the White House Office of Management and Budget. Was there a career move that felt especially crazy? Certainly leaving a very good job in the White House to buy Barefoot Contessa, a specialty food store in a place I had never been, was about as crazy as it gets, she laughs. It was courageous, but a little nuts. When I made the change, I thought I didn't know anything. But once I went in, I thought, I do know how to do this. How did you prepare, or how did your past prepare you? Only in the process of writing the memoir did I come to understand that I actually had been doing everything I would do at Barefoot Contessa in my 20s, but I did it for fun. I had taught myself how to cook. I had taught myself how to renovate houses. I had taught myself how to go to the bank and get a loan, things that you need to know when you run a business. Now I realize it wasn't so crazy. Your career can be physically demanding. How do you take care of yourself? Having a body is really difficult. I work out with a trainer twice a week, and I do yoga twice a week. I think both are really important. But also, as I've gotten older, I tend to work really hard in the mornings and then do other things in the afternoon. For a couple of hours a day, I have to be what I call toes up. I might read in bed or take a nap or answer emails. Your body tells you when you're tired. Most of us just power through it, and that takes its toll. I have learned to listen. Even after all these years, you write that cooking can still be really hard. Cooking is like driving a car. You don't just set it on a course and have to go straight. You have to adjust the wheel along the way. Maybe the chicken is a different size than you expected, or the carrots aren't as sweet as they were last week. It takes enormous concentration, and that's just before the guests arrive. The shopping and the cooking and the table setting and the flowers, and then at the end of it, appearing for your guests like you're completely relaxed. It exhausted me when I was 25, and it still does. But I love doing it, so I keep doing it. What advice would you give those for whom hosting a dinner is intimidating? The key is that it doesn't matter what you serve. You can serve something simple that's delicious with a peach tart from a bakery and have a very good time with your friends. You don't have to make the peach tart. What are you doing differently these days as a hostess that some of us might want to try? I've come back to something that I used to do but haven't done in a long time, which is instead of doing dinner on Saturday night, which is a big deal with lots of courses, doing lunch on Sunday. The meal is simpler, everybody has more energy, they've done all their chores on Saturday, and I find the guests are more relaxed. And this interview was by Darcy Orr Sivright, and she was interviewing again Ina Garten, chef. And finally, another item or two on saving money. This was under the heading of freebies. Free gift cards. Walmart's Gadget to Gift Cards program will send you free gift cards in exchange for old electronics, including cell phones, speakers, and smartwatches that you no longer use. Visit the retailer's Gadget to Gift Cards website to get a printable packing label. The value of the gift cards varies from a few dollars for an older Fitbit to hundreds for a newer iPad. Walmart pays AARP a royalty for use of its intellectual property and provides a benefit to AARP members. Everyday shopping. Add shopping app folders. About 1 in 3 major retailers have an app that often offers extra discounts and benefits. Download these apps and put them into folders on your phone. One for grocery stores, one for restaurants, and so on. Well, folks, we have come to the end of our time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I do hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.